couple of weeks ago, I made a video called Issues with Libertarian Arguments Against Socialism. And predictably, I got a little bit of pushback from libertarians who objected to my critique, saying that I equivocated on my definition of freedom, and therefore the argument falls apart. Now, equivocation means that you're using the same word to mean two different things. On the face of it, equivocation is an informal fallacy, a fallacy of language, but in fact it becomes a formal fallacy, something called the four-term fallacy, when you write it out using symbols. M is P, S is N, therefore S is P, the four-term fallacy. Now, I understand the importance of definitions. In fact, I wrote a book last year which starts with a passage on the importance of definitions. And I take pains, great pains, to focus on the differing meanings of freedom. This comes back to Isaiah Berlin's two concepts of liberty, of course, positive liberty, the freedom to, and negative liberty, the freedom from. And in that book, I lean very heavily, as does the entire liberal and libertarian tradition, on freedom from, negative liberty, rejecting the Rousseauian notion of positive liberty or the freedom to. However, since then, I have reflected on whether these two types of liberty are really as different as they appear. And I came across this essay by Gerald C. McCallum Jr., written in 1967 in the Philosophical Review, in which he argues that the distinction made by Isaiah Berlin is false. He argued that there is only really one concept of freedom, and it is as follows. Freedom has three terms. One, an agent. Two, certain preventing conditions. And three, certain doings or becomings of the agent. McCallum's argument is something like this when written out formally. No free agents are constrained by certain preventing conditions. All who can do or become certain things are free agents. Therefore, none who can do or become certain things are constrained by certain preventing conditions. Now, if you really think about this, the distinction between freedom to and freedom from, therefore, falls down. The preventing conditions, once they're taken away, give you a freedom to do something. So the typical libertarian slash liberal distinction between these two things, according to McCallum, is built on a false dichotomy. Now, I thought it might be interesting to test this case by writing out the syllogism again, but swapping the terms with a real life example like trans women. And it would go something like this. No transitioned trans women are constrained by laws preventing sex changes. All who could transition and did transition are transitioned trans women. Therefore, none who could transition and did transition are constrained by laws preventing sex changes. Now, of course, in this case, note that the trans woman was both free from laws preventing transition and free to transition. So both negative and positive liberty was fulfilled. And in this way, McCallum shows that the distinction is ultimately a false one. Ah, but you might be thinking, what about the fact that trans activists want to force you to use their pronouns? Well, people who wish to misgender trans women are constrained by gender pronoun laws. And again, using McCollum's terms, they are not free from laws preventing you from misgendering trans women, and therefore you are not free to misgender trans women. So, the law that allows sex changes is a liberal law. The law that prevents misgendering is an illiberal law by this definition. So what happened here? Well, in this case, in the case of transgenderism as an issue, liberalism or libertarianism acted as the handmaiden to socialism. It created the conditions in which it was possible for the illiberal law to be made. And this is a recurring pattern throughout recent history. For example, ending the Jim Crow laws in America was a liberal law. But the second step, the state-mandated desegregation, was an illiberal or socialist law, literally compelling at gunpoint people to go to school together who didn't necessarily want to go to school together. Note that conservative illiberal laws on social issues, such as a law preventing sex changes or a racial segregation law like Jim Crow, are nearly always overturned. And this is celebrated by liberals or libertarians. Whereas socialist illiberal laws on social issues are never overturned, and liberals or libertarians seldom fight them for long. Thus, what we see is liberals and libertarians working first to make conservative losses permanent, and secondly, to make socialist gains permanent, because of this dynamic that we have seen recur over and over again. And this is consistent with my original argument. Libertarians and socialists ultimately share the same goals. And I have just depicted this as a meme. You get the socialist and the libertarian, both handmaidens to each other. It turns out the libertarian serves to soften and repeal an existing conservative law. The socialist then goes a step further and mandates compliance, as in the case of the transgender or in the case of the desegregation laws. Now, in fact, what we're seeing are, I think, the twin heads of international finance. First, when they want to relax a law for themselves or their overwhelmingly hedonistic vision of society, they call on their libertarian friends for support. And then secondly, when they want to impose a law, typically to banish traditional morality, they can call on their socialist friends for support. And there's a logic to this, because guess what? Sin sells. The seven deadly sins, lust, gluttony, greed, sloth, wrath, envy, and pride, are all relentlessly pushed by the services that liberal laws allow to proliferate. Sin is a very useful tool of control, and I will show you some test cases here. The perfect minion of those in power is someone who is addicted to porn or cheap sexuality, lust, somebody who loves to consume food, gluttony, someone who can be easily bribed by money, greed, someone who is lazy, sloth, someone who is easily outraged, wrath, someone who is jealous of what others have, envy, of course, and someone who has an unearned or excessive sense of self-worth. And that is, of course, the original sin of pride. Now, I understand that not everybody is a Christian. I am not a Christian. But I don't think these seven deadly sins are unique simply to Christianity. I think that they are something approaching the natural laws of mankind. Everybody understands that it's not good to be gluttonous, to be greedy, to be lazy, excessive lust or cheap lust, jealousy, pride. I mean, these are almost undoubtedly bad things that proliferate when liberals successfully overturn conservative laws, and then the socialists go a step further, and then they serve to mandate acquiescence to these things, or in some cases even make it illegal to point them out. And there are just too many examples to note through history. Now, libertarians here will object, and they will say, well, that's not me. It's all a matter of self-control. We know sin is wrong, but you need to be free to choose. These are all the typical comebacks that the libertarian will come up with. Socialists, meanwhile, will answer, I don't care about any of that. They think nothing at all about imposing their will on the world. And thirdly, they consistently benefit from the slutty, gluttonous, lazy, easily outraged, envious, and excessively vainglorious people who are produced by an anything-goes set of social laws, which is brought about by a laissez-faire attitude in the social and the moral sphere. It seems to me that these things go hand in hand with liberalism. Where there is an increase in liberalism, you see an increase in these sorts of behaviours, which then gives rise to more socialism. Yes, you get an increase in material wealth with liberalism, but the negative side of that, or the downside of that, is that it comes with a massive increase in degeneracy. Everybody is just free to choose their own particular moral code. Everybody is just free to choose whatever you want. I mean, anything goes. So of course you're going to end up with more and more people thinking it's okay to routinely commit acts that would have been unthinkable just a few generations ago. And paradoxically, given that the libertarian aim is ostensibly against those who hold power, their policy proposals benefit exactly those people who are in power. First, because socialists are exceptionally easily manipulated and therefore easy to control. Anybody who doubts that just needs to look at the past couple of years in US politics, or indeed in British politics, to see just how easily manipulated the left are. Because, why? Their whole system is built around respecting experts and authorities and essentially just parroting what they've been told in The Guardian. Meanwhile, libertarianism provides the perfect false flag, ineffectual opposition to socialism. Ineffectual for all of the reasons I've pointed out, and ineffectual because its understanding of freedom and the socialist understanding of freedom are in fact the same. And as I pointed out in the previous video, ultimately their ends are the same. These are both products of the French Revolution, just driving at different speed limits, so to speak. And what this kind of double handmaiden, mutually self-reinforcing situation does for those in power is that it keeps the true enemy, that is the true enemy of those in power, defeated in all cases. That's why you're currently watching the Republicans in America try to revert from Trumpism back to this kind of beltway libertarian Mitt Romney small government cuck GOP, because they know libertarianism doesn't really offer any genuine opposition to the things they want to do on the social front. And it's on the social and the cultural front that the left wins its most enduring victories. Then, in the area where it counts for those in power, the libertarians put up very good resistance against any genuine socialism coming in. So, you know, in this country, the Jeremy Corbyns, and in America, the Bernie Sanders, they're never really going to get their way when it comes to having a more command and control economy dictated from Whitehall or from Washington, because that would compromise the private and the, I would say, excessive private power of the likes of, you know, William Fence, Mark Zuckerberg, Apple, Google, the owners of newspapers, etc., etc., because these private means are the vehicle through which those in power get to exercise their power without any real responsibility or accountability to anybody. So in fact, what libertarianism has done over the past 20, 30, 40 years is smoothed the path of all of these people to make them less accountable, to make it easier for them to dominate, while of course failing to overturn a single socialist or leftist social policy that has been brought in after they paved the path by relaxing the original conservative law. So that's my comeback on all of the criticisms I got from the first video. There is going to be a third video in this trilogy where I explore further some of the implications of what I'm saying. Today I talked about the definition of freedom. In the next video, I want to focus more on the consequences of a materialist mindset and how, ultimately, libertarianism plays into that materialist mindset rather than resists it. Please note, however, that this has absolutely nothing whatsoever to do with Austrian economics and its correctness. That's a quite separate issue from what I'm saying here, which is ultimately about what a society and what people in that society value and hold dear. These are questions of morals. And ultimately, as I'll explore next time, morals may be downstream of what people call metaphysics, or specifically epistemology, which is the metaphysics of knowledge. But that's for next time. See you then.
Now available at the Academic Agency. Sharpen your analytical mind and your argumentation skills with Foundations of Logic. The course draws on the ancient wisdom of traditional logic that students learned for over 2,000 years, from the time of Aristotle through to the medieval schoolmen, right down to the 20th century. Sign up now for a free preview lecture.
Be sure to like this video and subscribe. And if you really like my content, maybe consider joining the channel or donating or maybe even buy a mug. I am grateful for all of your support. Now get out.